You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. Today, we've got CJ Moore in the building. I think this is the second time CJ's been on this show. It's far too few times, given how good of a dude CJ is. CJ and I are going to break down some early college basketball breakout players that we think might be turning into legitimate NBA draft prospects. Some of them were on the radar to start the season. Some of them were a little bit off the radar and are working their way onto the radar. CJ and I just kind of wanted to talk basketball. That was kind of the biggest impetus of this. And I love CJ's mind and his brain, so I had him come on the show. CJ, what's going on, buddy?
Thanks for the nice introduction. Not too much. Just trying to keep up with all this ball.
CJ is the lead college basketball writer over at The Athletic. He does a great job covering the sport, does the top 25 list every weekend now. He does incredible feature work. Go subscribe. Check his work out. He's the best. So I think the place I want to start this conversation with is last night we saw Kentucky play Miami. And Kentucky's backcourt is not what we expected it to be coming into the year. I think we all expected DJ Wagner to be the starting guard and to dominate the ball and to make everything happen. And instead come Rob Dillingham and Reed Sheppard. And I'm not going to lie to you. I think Reed Sheppard has been the best freshman in college basketball this season. Point blank. Sorry to Isaiah Collier. Sorry to Jacoby Walter. When I watch Reed Sheppard play basketball, to me, he is the most impressive one because he's doing it on both ends. He's efficient. He makes, have you seen him make a wrong decision yet, CJ?
I don't think so. He's like a coach's dream.
He's unbelievable. The only thing I can point to is that play at the end of, I think it was the Kansas game where he fade away, like
three pointer. McCullough got him.
Yeah, McCullough got him on.
And I think, I remember what one you're talking about. Then also he had a pass where he's floating over the baseline and he throws it out and McCullough steals it, which, I mean, that's one of the best defensive backs basically in college basketball. So, we found two mistakes.
Yeah, that's it. We've got two Reed Sheppard mistakes all season. He's averaging 12 points, 4 rebounds, 3.6 assists. Have you looked at his shooting splits recently?
I was going to quiz you. What's his offensive rating? Do you know what it is?
So I don't know that one. So this is a good quiz. Okay. I would guess it's legitimately like 135. Like 145?
Keep going.
155? Like, what are we doing here?
150.2.
Yeah, that's insane. That's the highest number I think I've ever seen.
I will say it's 12th in the country, so there are 11 dudes with a higher offensive rating. I will say, what do you think his usage rate is?
Oh, it's pretty low. It's probably like 18, 17.
16. So yeah. That would be my only pushback on, like, if we start talking, is Reed Sheppard one and done, this kind of thing, like, hit the reason for him to come back to school might be, one, he's going to make just a ton of NIL money at Kentucky, and probably pretty fun being Reed Sheppard at Kentucky right now. Like, I can't imagine a better existence than his existence right now. Kyle Tucker and I kind of have a running text thread joke about how good it is to be Reed Sheppard. But I also think, like, you know, him to have a chance to come back and kind of be on the ball a little bit more and dominate the ball a little bit more, like, that might be something. I mean, kind of like a – I mean, I don't want to put him in the same category as Steph Curry, but, like, you know, Steph Curry going back to Davidson to run point guard. I mean, we're getting in just ridiculous realms with Reed Sheppard that we probably never dreamed we'd get to as a, you know, seven games into his freshman season.
So, like, you bring up the Stephen Curry name, and look, I don't want to dive too deeply into this, but from a feel and, like, decision-making perspective and how quickly he does things on and off the ball, it is kind of, like, reminiscent. Like, I don't think he's going to be the shooter that Steph is. I don't think he's going to be I don't think he's going to be Stephen Curry.
Yeah,
he's not that dynamic. Like, Stephen Curry became one of the most dynamic ball handlers in the NBA. Mm-hmm. There's a case that he's one of the best ball handlers in NBA history, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think Reed Sheppard is going to be that. But just in terms of the feel, making the right decision every single time. Steph obviously gets wild with it sometimes. Like, that was always a factor at Davidson, and Reed doesn't necessarily do that. I actually kind of love the role that he's in at Kentucky. They're starting to play more and more on the ball. Mm-hmm. For spurts, obviously Rob Dillingham comes in and plays on the ball. DJ Wagner starts the game on the ball. You know, that I don't know how long that's going to last at this point. When Reed comes in and plays on the ball, it feels like the offense flows really well. Mm-hmm. But also when he plays off the ball, I love how quickly he's making decisions. He's able to move that thing around. He's hitting quick reversals. He's hitting quick little cutters if those guys come available. And then additionally, he's shooting 63% from three. And look, I don't think he's a 63% three-point shooter, but I do think he's a legitimate 40%, 45% three-point shooter. Like, that's the real talent level that he has as a shot maker. So you have this guy who I think is actually in a similar role to what he would do in the NBA, which makes me wonder if, like, does he need to come back to be on the ball? Like, this is, he's actually showcasing the role, in my opinion, that he'll be playing in the NBA right now.
Yeah. And you haven't even talked about his defense. Like,
I know, right?
I mean, that's where he's even more special. I mean, he has a, what's his steals rate? 6.9 steals rate.
I mean, that's got to be top in the country, right?
Like, last night he blocked a three-pointer, and he's only 6'3". I got real curious. I was like, I wonder how many three-pointers he's blocked, because I feel like it could be five. But he's only blocked the one. But I bet there are some more to come. Like, his just instincts and his anticipation on both ends of, like, what's going on in a basketball game. You know, with Steph Curry having grown up the son of an NBA player and, like, learned the game from somebody who really, really knew it. Similar deal with Reed. I mean, his dad didn't play in the NBA, but he was a really, really good basketball player. I think his mom played at Kentucky.
So his mom's like in the top 10 of, like, a number of Kentucky statistical categories in Kentucky. Yeah. And his dad did play in the NBA for like a minute, Jeff Sheppard. But Jeff is obviously like,
I remember that.
Yeah. Jeff's like extremely well known as like a Kentucky legend at this point. Was most outstanding player at the 1998 Final Four. That's why Reed Sheppard has the potential NIL opportunities that he's going to have, and why I think that Reed is in a really interesting one and done situation. There's no bad situation. Like, you kind of alluded to it. Like, imagine being Reed Sheppard on the Kentucky campus right now. But I do think that, I mean, we just need to be like very transparent and real about this. Like, this is a white dude at Kentucky in a situation that is going to lead to real NIL opportunities in that state. The son of a women's basketball legend, a men's basketball legend who won the most outstanding player at the Final Four, there are going to be a number of opportunities that come his way. And there are going to be donors that, in my opinion, come out of the woodwork that may not be contributing to like the collectives and things like that right now, that probably would be willing to get Reed Sheppard back for a second year, which makes me think that like Reed probably has to go somewhere in like the top 20, 25 to like make up the money. Now, if Reed's going to stick in the NBA, and I think he's got a very real shot to, there's real value to being a one and done and being able to get to your second contract quicker. Reed is also a little bit older for a freshman. I think he's already 20 years old. Mm-hmm. So there is real value to him being a one and done, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think he is a one and done. I think he is, like I said, the best freshman I've seen. Where do you think I have Reed Sheppard on my board right now, CJ?
Oh, man. 12.
Yeah, I've got him at 11. I'm very in.
You're in. He is, I wonder what his wingspan is. It's got to be
really interested. Yeah.
It's got to be fairly long, just some of the plays he makes. And he is, you know, I looked it up. He's 6'3 is what they list him at. He might be 6'2. Who knows?
No, I feel like when I watch him, I think like there's a real shot. I don't think he's 6'4, put it that way. No. Like, he might be 6'2.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, here's the thing about him in the NBA is every coach will fall in love with him. They'll want to play him. Yeah. The fact that he is doing what, like, he's having this amazing start at Kentucky and he's just playing like, but he's playing like perfect ball. And the fact that he has a 16% usage rate is kind of impressive. Like, imagine your ego when you have a start like that at Kentucky, when you are who he is and you're okay with, yeah, I'm just going to have a 16% usage rate. He's going to play like however you want him to play as a pro. And he can hang on the defensive end. I mean, I think that's with like a white kid as a freshman, you're worried about a lot of times, like, are they just going to get cooked defensively? And he's a really, really, really good defender.
Well, look, like, let's be real about it too. Like, once he hits the NBA, like, there are going to be dudes that go, oh, we're going to attack the little white kid, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's just the reality of the way the NBA rolls. Now, I think that he is smart enough. I think that his hands are good enough. I think he's disruptive with the way that he uses his hands, obviously with the steals and blocks. His timing is unbelievable, I think. Like, when I watch him, I'm just like, oh, my God, like, this guy – his ability to time when guys are going to make passes, when guys are going to go up for shots, contesting shots. It's unbelievable. Like, I don't know if I've seen much quite like it with somebody like him. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, I'm very in on Reed Sheppard. I want guys that are basketball geniuses. Like, that is my thing. Like, I love dudes that just know how to fucking play. I tweeted this last night and I think somebody like retweeted me and said, like, you know, being good at basketball is underrated in like evaluation for the NBA's purposes. And I'm just like, honestly, sometimes I agree. And this is the case. Like, this guy, this type of player right here is the case where just being fucking good at basketball, that's what matters. Like, Reed Sheppard is clearly awesome at the game of basketball. He plays with good deceleration. He plays with great pace. He understands how to move without the ball. He processes the game quicker than everybody else out on the court. He's, you know, I think he's a better athlete than what people give him credit for. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I just used like the white basketball player dictionary to its fullest, but it's hard. Like, he's really good at basketball, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm right there with you. I love guys that actually have feel and have an understanding how to play. I think we had this talk this summer at Summer League. It was like so clear, the guys that understand how to play ball and the guys who don't in that environment. And I think it's where you can start to see the guys who are going to make it and who aren't, just because there's some guys who understand how to play and there's some guys who aren't. And in the college level, sometimes you can hide that with some coaches and their systems can hide that. But the way Kentucky's playing, like, it's wide open. It's very clear that he knows what the heck he's doing. Here's a question for you. 5 years from now, who would you rather have, Reed Shepard or Rob Dillingham?
Reed. So here's why. And I'm glad that you did that because I wanted to transition to talking about Reed now.
You mean to Rob?
Rob, I'm sorry. Dillingham has been incredible to start the season, and I don't want to take anything away from him whatsoever on the offensive end. Truly, there is nothing that he has showcased that like he can't really do on offense as like a lead creator. You watched him a pretty decent amount in high school, right?
Dillingham?
Like a little bit.
I watched him for a game, and I also saw Reed for a game, at least a game or two.
Yeah, when I watched Rob in high school, I thought that like he just was kind of a chucker a little
bit. I didn't like him. I didn't like how he played. It did the one game I watched.
I didn't really like how he played either in the tape that I watched. And that is completely the opposite of how he's played at Kentucky so far. Mm-hmm. Like he has been unselfish. He has been willing to make plays for his teammates. He's played at great pace while also being able to drive transition play and attack out on the break. He hasn't been over aggressive. I think that the passing has been the biggest thing that stood out to me. Like every time I watch him, I'm just like, oh no, like you can really pass, and you found the right balance between going to get your own shot as well as going to find shots for your teammates. I'm glad that Matty Zolo in the YouTube comments brings up, he creates some crazy passing angles. He does it through eye manipulation a lot of the time too, as well. I think he does a really, really good job of manipulating help defenders into moving where he wants them to go and then finding the angles to hit his teammates. I think Rob Dillingham has been awesome. I still think he's been quite bad on defense. And the frame worries me in terms of defending in the NBA. Like Reed is stronger and I think is going to be able to hold up a little bit more. I really worry about like teams just like switching Rob Dillingham onto their best players and just going, yeah, we're going to attack you every time down the court.
Yeah. His speed is elite though. That's where like, I think there's a real debate because his speed is like, that's NBA speed. And there's only a few guys, not even just NBA, that's elite NBA speed. Like he made Kansas dudes just look like they were playing in sand.
DeJuan Harris is not slow.
He is not slow. And there was a stretch of that game where he was running circles around those dudes. So he's intriguing. Like, I think we're still really early. I want to see them against more good teams. Like Miami is a really good team, but Miami's defense is usually leaves something to be desired. So, I want to see these guys halfway through the SEC and kind of see where they are. Like a Rob Dillingham, Reed Shepard, it would be fun to come back to this debate in February and see where we are. But those guys, I actually think with Rob, I think that him being the guy, and again, we saw a very small sample size of him in high school. I could have caught him on the wrong day. But Reed, when I saw Reed, he played like this in his grassroots basketball. I would theorize that coming off the bench for Rob has been the right amount of humility for him to kind of get him to really buy into like playing a good role for Kentucky. So like it's one of those situations where maybe it's a guy coming in not feeling himself so much because I am coming off the bench. And that's probably been good for him. But yeah, I would take both these guys over DJ Wagner right now. Not to rule out him as a prospect or to say he's trash. And it's been early and some guys they all progress at different rates. But, it's kind of crazy. Kentucky's best two guards come off the bench.
Yeah, I like Rob coming off the bench is where I'm at because I like the change of pace that he gives.
For sure.
I would probably start Reed at this point if I was them, but that's just where I'm at on it. Okay, let's move to another team here. Let's talk about our beloved Marquette Golden Eagles. CJ and I have loved the Marquette basketball team for the last 2 years, and it's really because of two guys. Really for me, it's two, I think, at this point. It is Tyler Kolek and Oso Iguodaro. I want to start with Igodaro, because Igodaro is the guy that I've gotten consistently stronger feedback on from NBA people.
Mm-hmm.
I think, again, there's a case that he might be the smartest player in college basketball among bigs, at least.
Oh, yeah.
When you watch him play, he just is completely and utterly in control of what's happening out there in everything they do within their perimeter-based screening actions and dribble handoffs and everything. Mm-hmm. He has this innate understanding of how and where and when to roll into space and how to create space and how to create driving angles for his guards. Mm-hmm. He's a good screener for somebody who is not like enormous, right? He's, yeah, you know, 6'11", but he's probably 230 pounds, let's call him.
The ability to flip your hips really quickly and flip a screen, like that's where he gets really valuable. Yeah.
100%. And then on top of it, he is able to differentiate his role despite not being a shooter. Mm-hmm. He can go up and try and catch a lob from Tyler Kolek. He can short roll to pass, and then he can short roll to hit that little push shot floater that he has too, that has become just like totally lethal.
Mm-hmm.
These are the exact kind of guys that translate in the NBA offensively, because they can be great offensive players without getting great touches necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's just lethal when he gets touches, and his feel for the game is just astronomically high every time I see him.
Yeah. The ability to screen, know how to screen and to play out a pick and roll, I think is one of the most like underappreciated things in basketball, because you, when the more like the ball screen is so much a big part of college basketball. And I think there are a lot of programs that like don't actually teach it well, and their guys don't know how to play out of ball screens. Like they run them and they work sometimes, yeah, but they actually know how to play out of them. And big guys who don't really know how to screen and how to change the angle of the screen and how to flip it and all of that such. And like, he is elite at those things. And I'm actually working on a story on Oso right now. Like that's how I spent part of my day today, and it's how I will spend all of tomorrow. So this is right up my alley. And here's another guy that coaches are just going to love. And yeah, to give you a little fun little anecdote that I'll probably throw in my story, but we'll give you a little preview here. I was at the Maui Invitational, and after Purdue beats Marquette, I chased down Matt Painter in the hallway afterwards before he like gets on the bus to celebrate his title. And, you know, I obviously won him for the Purdue story that I'm writing that day, but I also was like, I got to get him for Oso. So that's the first thing I say. Yeah. I say, I'm doing a story on Oso. He stops dead in his tracks. He turns to me and he goes, oh shit. Like, he was so excited to talk about Oso. Like, coaches freaking love that guy, because he's yeah, so good. And the fact he can hit that like push shot, I think that's what's exciting about the NBA, not like all these other things in the field, but like he does, yeah, have some kind of ability to score in an NBA game. I actually think he should take the push shot as his free throw.
Like, this is a crazy take, and I need to hear more about it.
he has like no touch. Like, he has no He had an air ball free throw at the Maui Invitational, and he had a banked free throw at the Maui Invitational.
Yeah.
Like, he has no feel for like the distance on his jump shot, which like I was getting real excited because he was working on his three ball this off season. And there was some like some Instagram footage of him hitting threes at a decent rate, which, you know, you always have to take those. This is a lesson that like never take summer, yeah, stuff and summer videos for much value. But you're going to see with his free throw, like he has no, I don't know if touch is the right word, but like depth perception type thing. But he is
money. That's that the right shot. Way. Yeah. I think it's like depth perception shot with the full shot. Like, he can't figure that piece of it out. I don't think he's ever going to shoot just like straight up. Like, that's very, very unlikely.
Yeah.
But everything else is good. And I like the way he's defended this year too. Like, I think he's actually been pretty good in space. I think that there is some switchability there. I don't think he's going to be like a legitimately switchable NBA big or anything, but like if he gets caught on an island, I think he's mobile and active enough to be able to make it work. I think that the biggest worry that I have is something that a couple of people have brought up in the comments. The Llama Whisperer, shout out, great YouTube name. As a Marquette fan, I do wish Oso would be more aggressive rebounding. Too many volleyball spikes and hits, in my opinion. But I love his ingenuity as a big. I totally agree that I think defensive rebounding particularly is where this comes up for me. Offensive rebounding, like, I'm fine with like the hit outs and tip outs and everything.
Sure.
Defensively, I think he needs to be able to really hold up and be able to hold his own on the glass. And then Keeman says, is there a concern regarding size and strength? I mean, I'll ask you, you were there in person. He had to deal with Zach Edey. Edey went for like 28 and 15 on them. Oso got in foul trouble in the first half particularly, and then came back in and played really well in the second half. What did you think about him kind of dealing with Edey on the interior?
So going into that game, that was my concern, because I feel like you can overpower him sometimes in the post. And but he also, you know, they also played Kansas, and I think Hunter had his worst game of the year against him. Marquette outscored Purdue by 10 points, I believe, or no, more than that. It was – I have it in my story. It was something like – let's see. I think they got outscored by I don't know. It was like 15-plus they outscored them with Oso in the game or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, he – you know, and his second screen – his second foul was on hedging a ball screen, like, way out. He shouldn't have gotten it.
It was a bad foul call too, I thought, to be honest. Yeah, like, I remember that. Yeah.
There were a couple of questionable ones on him. So he held up pretty good in that situation. And I will say, Marquette says that he's the strongest guy in the program. And like, he went from basically being the weakest when he got there to now he's the guy that lifts the most and is the strongest in their program. And he's pretty good size. Like, when you go and interview these guys in person, sometimes you get an idea of like how tall they are. I don't know that he's actually 6'11", which I think he's listed at, but he's probably not too far off. Zach Edey is every bit of 7'4".
Yeah. Zach Edey's a big dude. Can confirm. Dirty Dancer in the comments brings up, Oso looked more than fine against traditional bigs at UCLA. Yeah, I thought he played really well against the Dembona. For sure.
I think that part of it he answered in Hawaii. I mean he can really get up too. So there's some like help side blocking shots ability that's pretty good as well. And he knows how to like go up as a vertical defender. So I just love him. I mean, other than the jump, yeah, obviously the jump shot's never going to be there. Like you said, I don't think it ever gets there, but it's kind of similar to how I felt last year about Andre Jackson. Like, there's so much basketball creativity and realizing you've gone so long without being able to shoot, you realize how to impact a game without it. And Andre Jackson's off to a pretty good start in the NBA, right? If I'm not mistaken, he's getting actual.
He's been good.
Minutes. He's getting real minutes. Yeah. So, anyway, I love Oso. Like, I could go on for days about him. Well, should we talk Tyler? Well, I'm interested to hear what you think of Tyler.
Yeah. Look, I love Tyler just from like a toughness perspective. I think I was the only person in the preseason to have him in the top 60. I really like him. I would have him as a first round pick right now. Part of that is like the draft class, just to be 100% clear. Mm-hmm. But I watched Tyler Kolek and I'm like, okay, this guy can be a great backup point guard. He is super tough. Mm-hmm. He is a ball screen like maestro, like really knows how to use them, really knows how to manipulate his big. He knows how to work synergistically with his big to be able to create separation from his man. Mm-hmm. I think he can shoot. I mean, I know that the numbers have been up and down throughout his career, but I actually do think he can shoot now. The decision-making is always on point, like consistently makes the right calls. It's a lot of like a, I mean, there are going to be a lot of guys in this draft class that I feel like I make this comparison to, but it does remind me a lot of like what Jordan McLaughlin was at like USC. And he has turned into a really strong NBA player. Obviously Tyler's a little bit better than what Jordan was at USC, but like, you know, makes the right decisions constantly, can shoot, doesn't have a lot of holes on the offensive end. Yeah. And he's like pretty big. Like he's like 6'3", like he's a bigger dude that you can kind of make it work with on that side of the court. So when I look at Tyler, I think that he's probably going to be fine if you put him in an NBA setting and if you ask him, hey, we need you to run the show for 15, 20 minutes a night. And in this draft, like if I'm getting a backup point guard at number 28, number 30, I'm probably okay with that.
Yeah. I TJ McConnell kind of comes to mind from,
good name.
Not that they're like the same player. Like I actually think he's a better shooter than TJ. He's 11 of 21 from three so far this year, but kind of having just that like tough as shit and knowing how to play and is like going to figure it. Like he's not as good a defender as TJ is, but I hate to like use another white guy as an example, but that's an example that I think, you know, why he gets by. Let me talk on that for a second while I go feed my dog. I will be back in 30 seconds.
Well, we'll talk about Tyler. So with Tyler, what I really, really like about his game outside of everything I just mentioned is that he plays at this really strong pace as well. And I think there's just like this level of like herky jerky kind of style that he has to his game that is hard to stay in front of as well. He's very creative around the basket. Obviously, like CJ said, he's knocked down shots, looking through his 3-point percentages throughout the course of his career. You know, obviously he's hitting 52% this season, but last season he hit 40% from three, hit 80% from the line. He's been a consistent 81% free throw shooter throughout the course of his career. And then on top of it, you look at like comparing him to other guys, right? So like Dirty Dancer brings up Kylan Boswell. I think Tyler's just kind of bigger than Kylan Boswell. Like you look at them, I think that Tyler plays bigger than Kylan, which allows him to be able to have like a better, I know that like Kylan does a good job at the point of attack defensively. I just worry about Kylan's size, like in a real way in the NBA. He looks small. Tyler doesn't look that small to me when he's on the court.
And what he has gotten even better at this season, I think, like why he's, I don't know if he's what his average is compared to last year, but he is so good at like getting into the lane, getting within 10 feet and just kind of sticking his shoulder in you and getting those hook shots up with like incredible touch. He's making those at a really, really high rate. Those are really hard shots. And he's doing it over guys with like legit NBA athleticism and length. And that's why I think like you get excited about him at the next level, because when you can make shots like that against like legit good long defenders, like that kind of stuff can translate. And that's why I would like, if I'm a pro scout, I'm like, okay, this is interesting. Like, you know, maybe he's not as quick as I want or, you know, but defensively, whatever, but he's going to battle. He's going to make the right play. He's pretty strong. And I'm there. I'm, you know, Cam Jones is the other guy I told you I'd consider from that team. Like I love Marquette. I think you say two guys, I say at least three, because I think Cam Jones is one of the creative scorers.
To be clear, if you go out into like the 2025 and 26 classes, even like of like potential draft picks, I think there's even more than Cam Jones. Like I think Chase Ross is really interesting. Like I think, they've got like real dudes on that team.
Chase Ross is the next one for them. Cam is one of the most creative scorers in the country. Yeah. And I think that kind of creativity, you know, just dudes that can just go get buckets is that kind of stuff works in the NBA. Like a Bones Highland has, you know, made a living in the NBA. Just guys that can figure out how to go get buckets and just kind of have that playground creativity to them. That's Cam to me. Like he does things on the court that you just don't see other people try. And a ridiculous layup maker below the rim too.
Yeah, So, you mentioned Reed Sheppard coming back to, like, run the show at Kentucky. I would actually like to see Cam Jones go back to Marquette next year and, like, run the show at Marquette a little bit. I would really like to see what his passing and, like, playmaking ability looks like, because ultimately, yeah, Cam is, like, he's listed at 6'5". Do you think he's 6'5"?
No, but
yeah, neither do I.
Like, he might be 6'4", but they do so much, you know, with their playing two man, three man games, like a lot of two-man games. His stuff with Oso this year, if you watch when they get to do their two man game, is even more creative this season.
Yeah.
Like it's arguably just as good as Tyler and Oso. I do think he gets to do point guard type stuff, even though he's not the point guard sometimes. I could see him being a point guard maybe the next, but really he's just a kind of a combo, come in and off your bench and get some buckets kind of guy.
The Llama Whisperer brings up the best soundbite of the year is the Jay Billis moan during the Kansas Marquette game after one of Colek's passes to Oso.
I'll have to go back and watch that. I was there.
So the one that actually stands out to me is I literally had to send somebody close to Tyler a text message saying, I'm going to need you to ask Tyler at some point, did he mean to hit the corner here or was he trying to hit the dump off? It's the UCLA game. It looks like it's at, I'm like pulling up the clip right now because I have it saved because I'm a psychopath who saves all of these clips. I think it's at like the one, looks like the 5 minute mark maybe of the half. I'm literally trying to like pull it up full screen. Yeah. 5 minute mark of the first half. Basically he throws this pass between a window. I swear to God, I don't know how a ball fit through this window. Like the window was smaller than the size of a basketball. And Tyler, it looked like he was throwing a dump off to Oso and it got all the way to the corner, but then you realize like he had to put enough zip on it for it to actually get to the corner. So therefore it had to be to the corner the whole time. It completely made no sense to me whatsoever. Seeing him throw this pass.
What's the timestamp on that? I'm pulling it up.
5:19. It looks like the clip starts at, it's like
left in the first half or second
left in the first half. And it looks like he's throwing a dump off to Ben Gold. And it's just like, I don't understand how he did this.
It leads truly. To a David Joplin three.
Yes, that's absolutely right. It leads to a Joplin three. I'll hit pause on the window here. I can try and bring it up on my screen. Need to reduce some tabs first, but let's see here. So,
okay. Oops.
Yeah. Do you see this? Like, it's an insane pass.
I think, let's see, go back. So,
it's not this one. It's the first one. I'll let it run through again.
I'm watching it on my own here.
Yeah. So it's going to be this one through. He somehow gets that to the corner. I don't understand how he got that ball to the corner. It makes
there's no so sense much heat on it that I do want. I do think it's to Joplin.
At first, I think it's to the corner.
At first, I thought it was maybe meant for Gold. Does he throw this with his right hand?
Yes, it's an offhand pass.
Yeah.
It's nonsensical, CJ. Like, it makes no sense to me whatsoever that he made this pass.
It almost looks like, if you slow it down, it almost looks like Ben Gold back taps it, too.
A little bit, yeah, but it's, I don't think he does. Like, you can't back tap it, like, that on target, like, into the shooting pocket. Like, that'd be insane. If Ben Gold did that, Ben Gold is, like, a top five draft prospect. Like, there's no circumstance where that got back tapped directly into the shooting pocket.
There's a play I put in. This is like what watching Marquette basketball is all about. There's a play I put in the power rankings, or not the power, I guess it's the top 25, whatever you want to call it, from the week before, where Oso steals a ball between his legs, and or like steals it and starts the break by back tapping it through his legs to get the break going.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that play. It's an insane play. It's a totally insane play where he taps it through his legs.
Yeah, they just do fun stuff. But yeah, that might have been to the corner. He sees when, I mean, yeah, he's really fun to watch play. This is how I try to play the game of basketball. So I really.
So you're just all in. I love it so much. So let's take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to dive into some other guys. We're going to talk Ryan Dunn, Kobe Johnson, some other guys. But we wanted to take a lot of time on Kentucky and Marquette because they have like just really, really fun group of dudes right now. Okay, CJ, let's start with Ryan Dunn, because I think Dunn is probably the highest upside out of all of these guys. I have not seen a better defensive player in college basketball this year, point blank period. Apologies to Ryan Kalkbrenner. Apologies to some of the other great defensive bigs. I think Dunn has been better than them to this point. When I watch him defend, he is switchable at the very least 1 through 4. He guards college level fives like without real issue. I don't know if he'll be able to guard NBA level fives, but certainly college level fives. He can get out onto ones without really any problem. They have him like in the Florida game, like he was guarding Tyrese Samuel for most of that game. Who's like 6'10", 230 pounds, whatever he is. His help rotations are some of the craziest help rotations I feel like I have seen in college basketball from a wing in a long time. Like his scramble ability to come and block shots around the basket as a weak side rotational defender. His rotations, like in any sort of help situation, are just always on time and on point. His hands getting steals are unbelievable. I think that like for his age where he is, I think he's 20, maybe going to be 21 before the draft.
I think that's right.
Yeah. I think he might be like the best college young wing defender I've seen since OG Anunoby. If not, he's like very much in the conversation there.
Yeah. He's really good. And guys that come out of that program, like know how to play. I think that has some value as well, and know how to defend at like a high level. And he's got all the tools as well. I watched the West Virginia game today to just kind of prep because I know you've been going on about Ryan Dunn, and I hadn't had a chance to watch a full one of their games yet, and so I want to see when somebody else has the ball and he's guarding them. Like that's a really dangerous thing to do. The hands thing is that cannot be like overstated, like how quick and strong his hands are. And he guarded in part of that game. He guarded West Virginia's Jesse Edwards. So to do the 1 through 5, and Jesse Edwards is probably a top 5, top 10 center in the game. He's playing on a bad team, but he's pretty good. Yeah.
I'm a little bit lower on Jesse than some people are, but yeah, I understand.
Top 5 is probably an overreaction. I'm just now thinking, wow, there's a lot of good centers in college basketball, but he might be top 10, top 15-ish. Like he's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, he handled himself fine. Like he didn't guard him that many possessions, but they did put him on him for a little bit. So I'm there with you defensively. I think offensively is obviously where his limitations are. The jump shot to me, maybe it gets there someday, and he's young, and so who knows? It's not very good, but he is a really good cutter, and he's a good finisher around the basket, and like he plays. It's kind of a hard role to be able to show much offensively because he's basically playing one of the screeners and blocker mover. But he does know how to cut, and he knows how to screen, and he knows how to play basketball. And he, you know, he's not going to play a role where he's going to be asked to do that much offensively. I mean, the guy that kind of comes to mind of what his like role could be in the NBA, and it's one of those guys you always hope can become eventually a shooter, but doesn't, is who's the young fellow that was at, who played at Washington,
Matisse Thybulle.
Yeah, Matisse Thybulle. That kind of comes to mind. It's like just a special defender, but you know, is limited offensively. You worry about like the playoffs, but a really, really special defender.
I think he's closer to Herb Jones stylistically than Matisse. Matisse is like a maven off the ball, where like he's just flying around and like getting deflections and steals and everything, and is like wildly over aggressive. I think Ryan isn't over aggressive. I think he's just like timely and aggressive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's a difference
not Herb Jones offensively though, right?
No, well, like Herb played point guard sometimes for Alabama, and like
Herb could do things.
But like if you remember Herb early at Alabama, it was like a real struggle. So Herb Jones, in his, let's see here, first 3 years probably at Alabama, averaged 4.2 points, 6.4 points, 7.9 points, shot total over those 3 years. And he started for like a lot of those, all three of those years. Like he was an impact player from the jump. Shot 43.8% from the field, 23% from three on under 1 3-point attempt per game, and then took the big leap as a senior, where he was averaging like 11 points, 7 rebounds, 3.5 assists, and was like, I think he won SEC Player of the Year that year, which was like pretty rightfully given to him if he won it. Yeah, he did. So I look at somebody like Herb, and I think that there is some potential for Ryan. Ryan's also like a real late bloomer physically. He went from being like 6'3" and being like a low major recruit kind of, to jumping up to like 6'8". And then it was just like, oh, like, you know, Virginia's calling. There's some high school or high majors calling. So you never know kind of what the impacts on a guy's jump shot can be when you're growing that much, right? Like the whole trajectory of your jump shot changes, like everything from like your lower half changes when that happens. So it's really hard. I think it's really, really hard to know where exactly his level is going to be as an offensive player right now. It's not high right now, but have you looked at his defensive metric numbers yet, CJ?
I did look at the synergy stuff, which you always have to take with a grain of salt, because it's not perfect. But he's given up.
I just mean pure block and steal rate, where he
runs. Okay. All right. Yeah. They're both very high. I think I have it written down here, 11.6 block rate, 6.7 steals rate. Like that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Where do you think those rank nationally?
In each category, block rate, he's probably top 15, steals rate, probably top 5.
Yeah. He is top 19 in block rate and 6th in steal rate right now. I can't remember somebody that was that high in both.
Yeah, if you put those numbers together, I'm sure he's probably highest in the country.
Yeah, the impact that he's making on that end of the court is so drastic and real. I have him as a late lottery guy right now. I know that the offense is a real problem. I get it. I think the defense is so high end that like he is like Herb Jones-y upside, and Herb Jones would have been a lottery pick. I had Herb Jones as a first rounder that year. He ended up going in the second.
Talk your shit, Sam.
I will. but Ryan can't pass like Herb did. Like Herb could really move the ball. Herb could do some things differently.
He's taller than Herb, right?
Yeah, he's probably 6'8". Herb's like, you know, 6'7", something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we'll see where it goes. The next defense first prospect I want to talk about is Kobe Johnson. I have Kobe Johnson in my top 20 right now. Kobe, I think, has been incredible on the defensive end, and it started from game one. You're located in Kansas. You saw that Kansas State game. What did he do to Arthur Kaluma, CJ?
here I'm pulling up our text. where was it? I don't know. Let's see. Am I the blue? Yeah. Cause I was going nuts about Kobe. I think we both were going nuts about Kobe. Yeah. I like after I watched that game, I have it in one of my stories, what he did to, Arthur Kaluma. If you want to give me a second, I can look it up, but he just totally shut Arthur Kaluma down. Like that dude could not do anything. But I think the difference between Kobe and most of these defense first guys that we're talking about, like a Ryan Dunn, is like Kobe's actually has potential as an offensive player. I think he's shooting north of 40 from three so far this year. And I watched their summer stuff. I thought he looked really good with the ball in his hands there. And he plays with two ball dominant guards. And he's playing that role pretty well. So like their team long term that I like their chances. I think I dropped them out of the rankings this week just because they took a bad L this past
week. They lost to Oklahoma, if I remember correctly.
Oh yeah, that's not a bad L. Actually, I'm high on Oklahoma, but now that you've lost, you know, two games, I dropped you out. But Oklahoma is another team we don't need to go down that hole today. But have you watched Oklahoma yet?
I did not watch this game against USC yet. No, I'm excited to do so. Yeah. I know that people are excited about JV and McCollum, but again, like he's just like really, really small.
Remember though, when me and you talked about,
Milos Uzan. Yeah.
Yeah. Why I don't do radio and why I write things. Cause sometimes I can't pronounce names. Otigua Owa might be the other kid's name that I'm probably mispronouncing. Do you remember I told you I was like, watch that guy too? Like he's got a chance.
Yeah, you did.
He's really athletic. And I think he's leading him in scoring so far, or he's right there with Javion. So but no, I think Kobe that to go back to it, like he can actually score the ball and is like your kind of prototypical 3-and-D wing.
100%. Yeah. And like he's 3-and-D plus kind of, because he can really pass the ball. He can really defend. And then on top of it, he's hitting 42% from three. He hit 36% from three last year. I like that he's up the volume from three this year as well. I think he's been tremendous every single time that I've seen him play. It's a complete game. The best tape I've watched this year is still the USC and Mega tape from this summer, where him against Nikola Topic, who you're probably not super familiar with, but Nikola Topic is probably going to go somewhere in like the top six of this draft class right now, if you made me bet. He's this point guard that's like 6'6" and is like a pick and roll maestro. And watching him and Kobe Johnson like manipulate each other, with Kobe as the backside defender and Topic always trying to hit that like third level, trying to find those reads. Mm-hmm. They were just clearly like playing cat and mouse against one another. It was not, Topic didn't care who was in front of him, and Kobe Johnson like kind of didn't care who he was guarding. They were both trying to read each other the whole time, and like they both got each other. Like Topic got this incredible steal on him. Johnson got this incredible steal on him. Topic got like this awesome cross corner kick out, having moved Kobe Johnson like off of the man. That truly, if you guys can find that tape, like watch it. It's amazing. It's like truly some of the coolest stuff I've seen this year. But this is what Kobe Johnson can do. And this is why he's such a valuable player, in my opinion, in this class. He can just really, really play. And then the other guy is a guy that, you know, you went to Kansas, you know, Lawrence well. Kevin McCullough has been interesting this year. I think that obviously he's a phenomenal, phenomenal defensive player. I like what he's done as a passer this year and as a playmaker in secondary actions next to DeJuan Harris. That team is still trying to figure out what it is, I think, offensively a little bit with Hunter and with DeJuan, and then Kevin is there and they need another guy to step up, it feels like, with Johnny Furphy and Elmarco Jackson. But they've been really intriguing to watch just because McCullough has been quite good, I think, for Kansas.
All right, I'll get to Kevin in a second. I got the Kobe Johnson stats for you. Ready?
Here
against
we go.
Arthur Kaluma. He created, he had four steals and created five other turnovers. So nine turnovers created total in that game. And he held Kaluma to 6 points on 1 of 11 shooting.
Yeah, it was gross. It was a gross basketball game. what he did to Arthur Kaluma. It was just mean. Like, honestly, it was just kind of mean, it felt like.
Yeah.
It was incredible. But so, McCullough.
McCullough. I'm a McCullough fan, and I said this to you off air. It kind of reminds me of Christian Brown. And if you watch Christian Brown could shoot it decent at Kansas. I'm pretty sure his NBA shooting numbers are pretty bad from three, but he still gets a lot of minutes and plays valuable role for the Nuggets because he knows how to cut. He can finish at the basket. He knows how to play. He's going to guard. He's going to try really hard. And like, if you go back and watch that Marquette game, sound like a Kansan there, right? If you go back and watch that Marquette game, the guy that was like competing his ass off until the very end and that was pissed off that they were losing was Kevin McCullough. Like, he is one of the most competitive dudes in college basketball. He will talk his shit. He had Shaka
Smart as well.
The Shaka Smart got that fight going. If you go back and watch their summer stuff when they played the Bahamas, they're interviewing Buddy Hield afterwards. It's one of the most hilarious clips ever. They're interviewing Buddy Hield on the broadcast during the second half because I think Buddy sat out the second half. And they're like, "Oh, what do you think of Kevin?" He's like, "Yeah, like you can really guard." He's like, "And Mag, he talks a lot of shit." Like, he's talking to Buddy Hield. I was at the Arkansas game last year. He was having like a verbal conference, like talking shit back and forth throughout that game with a lady in the first row in the Arkansas section. Like, he is just super, super competitive. And I need to document all this in a story at some point, but I'm sure I will.
That will be fun. Speaking of the Marquette game, the funniest soundbite I've heard from anybody this year is still Bill Self gets asked about his like little tete-a-tete with Shaka Smart. And Shaka was like super diplomatic about it. Like in the press conference, he was just like, "Yeah, like we're Marquette. Like we're not going to take, you know, anything from anybody." And Bill Self gets asked about it. And he goes, "Yeah, whatever he said, you know, it's definitely not true."
yeah, it was pretty good. Kevin just know, like he can guard, really good anticipation, pretty good shot blocker for his size. Gets his hands on a lot of balls. Like I talked about earlier in the show when we were talking about Reed Sheppard, like one of the best defensive backs in the country, just like reading on the second side, on the help side. You know, he just knows where the ball is supposed to go, where it's going to go. His turnovers are really, really high this year, and that could be a knock against him. But honestly, it's just because they're trying to force feed it into Hunter Dickinson and throwing angled post, trying to throw those post passes over guys it's just going to lead to some turnovers. And not all of them are his fault. So I wouldn't say he's a turnover prone guy. That's where you have to like actually go watch the tape and understand that these turnovers are happening because of the way they're playing. I don't, you know, he's not going to be trying to throw it into the post 20 times in an NBA game. The shot is still concerning because I thought it was better this summer. I thought he had made progress. He shot it pretty well early. But since their first game, I don't know, I was looking at today, he's probably shot south of 25% from three since their first game, which he shot it well. I think that his confidence kind of comes and goes on his jumper, and you wish like he would get to – like why he's back into school is to show that he can shoot it at a consistent level. And I'm not sure that ever – or at least is going to happen this year in his final year of eligibility. We'll see. Maybe it'll come around. But to his credit, like he is putting up points. I think he's averaging 18 or so a game. Like he's done a really good job of – he's almost taken the Jalen Wilson rollover of he's just going to bulldoze his way to the basket. He's really good in transition. He's a good player. He's like a guy that you can trust to put on an NBA floor. Know he's going to play the right way. Know he's going to make the right passes. Know he understands how to cut. He's a really good cutter, and he's going to guard his ass off. So he's the type of guy that'll probably go lower in the draft than the team who gets him will be like, teams in front of us probably should have taken that guy somewhere in the 20s.
Yeah, no, I think that that's a very real potential outcome for him. I think I would still take him in the 30s just because I'm a little bit worried about the shooting. And that's just such a critical part of today's NBA. Like, you really have to be able to shoot. Like, Christian is at least somebody that can step in and knock down a shot. But, yeah, I don't know that about Kevin. The other guy that you love that we haven't talked about yet, we're going to move away from defense now, is Dalton Knecht. And Dalton Knecht this year has been pulling up the numbers now, averaging 17.5 points, 4.7 rebounds, 1.8 assists, 45% from the field, 38% from three, 82% from the line at Tennessee. Tennessee, it's very clear, like, is building their offense around him and his ability to knock down shots off of movement, his ability to occasionally run some ball screens. They're using him, you know, out of the post occasionally. It's like they're very clearly making him the guy. And he's also averaging, they've played four games against high majors so far, three of whom against high majors that I think are really good in Wisconsin, Purdue, and Kansas. He's averaging 17.5 in those games so far too. So I've been really, really impressed with Dalton Knecht's offense. I think that it's a very translatable skill set. We'll see what it looks like defensively. I think, I thought he did well in the Wisconsin game. They had him guarding AJ Storr, who's like this big physical dude. And then I thought, like, in Maui, I thought it was rough. We'll just leave it at that. But what did you think?
I think there's definitely progress to be made there, but that's why he's at Tennessee. Like, I'm also working on a story on him. Like, that's why he chose Tennessee to like go learn how to guard, basically. And there's moments where you can see it, and he's athletic enough that I think eventually he'll figure it out. I think he's almost like a freshman, and this is his first introduction to really high level basketball. And so there are going to be kind of some growing pains there. I thought, like, I honestly, offensively, I think the NBA spacing will be good for his game, because he's one of those rare guys who is a like legit three level scorer. Like, he's done really well from the mid range so far. He's finishing. I don't have his finishing numbers in front of me, but I know, I think he made his first 11 shots at the rim all season. He's a really, really good finisher, and like athletic finishes with both hands. Like, he had a play in one of the first few games, might have been the Wisconsin game, where he's like basically takes off from the free throw line and like floats in and makes a lefty scoop in transition.
Yeah.
And, you know, he can score over length. The jump shot release is really high. He's a little flat footed on it, but it's really high. I'd like to see maybe a little more arc on his shot. And like, sometimes I worry about guys with kind of flatter shots when they go back further to that NBA line, but I've watched him shoot in practice, and then now, like, he was shooting the heck out of it in their practices in Honolulu. And, his 3-point numbers have been, what's he at so far? 37.9. Like, I honestly think he's probably more like he's probably a 40% shooter this year from three. Like, I think he's a legit good shooter, and he's shooting a lot of them. So I like him. And the spacing point I was going to make, like the Purdue game, I thought they kind of shrunk the floor on him. And Braden Smith is like really, really good at basically closing a driving lane really quickly. That bothered him somewhat, but he still got 16 in that game. And he can really score, like, skill wise, and just like, he'll look great in a combine type setting. Like, in workouts, he's going to look awesome. It's just kind of getting used to high level basketball, the reads and that kind of stuff that I think is going to be a work in progress, also mostly on the defensive end this year. But from talking to people about him, like, I think he's a worker, and I think it's sometimes good when a guy comes from like nothing. Guy played JUCO ball, played 2 years at Northern Colorado, to be able to like have an experienced, like, people not telling you you're awesome for all your life. Sometimes those late bloomers are, end up being pretty good workers and pretty good players. But just from a skill, tools and the like actually having the body and the profile there is pretty high.
Well, he's a real athlete too. Like, he can really jump. Like, he has movement skills. His hips aren't like phenomenal, I don't think, but he very clearly can adjust in midair on some things as well. Can rebalance himself. Feels like he's an impressive dude offensively. where the defense settles this year is going to, A, I think, hold a lot of where his draft stock ends up, and B, kind of where Tennessee ends up, because they're going to need him to be able to defend as well. Tennessee is a program built around defense. It's why you and I were quite high on them coming into the year, and I'm still very, very high on them. Yeah. Based off of what we've seen, they're going to be really good with Connect, and Jordan Ganey has been pretty good as a shooter so far. Vescovy hasn't even made shots yet, and I think that he's been pretty good. And you look at like the defense guys with, you know, Jonas Adu, Jemai Meshack, like they have some dudes that can really, really play. Josiah Jordan James is like a good two-way player who's got to be 23 years old at this point. And this is without them having gotten anything yet from Freddie DeLeon. And then if they can get something from Cam Carr as well offensively, they're going to be really good.
That's like, the next one. That's the one to watch. Like, I don't know that he does anything this year, but they think like he's the next one that could, and watching him, he shoots it really, really well. His shot's nice, and he's tall. He's just skinny.
Yeah, it's just going to take him a minute in college.
Yeah, it's like Johnny Furphy at Kansas. He's a year away from being probably anything. But the one guy you didn't mention too is Zakai Ziegler. Like, I don't think he's right yet. If he gets healthy down the road, like they'll be a pretty good team. Their center spot concerns me offensively. And you know, you're a show that talks about draft prospects, so you probably don't care about, but I am still high on them. But yeah, I think he's going to get better as the season goes along defensively. Like, some guys are thinking so much offensively now, like freshmen, he's a freshman in a way. And a lot of times the guys are thinking too much on offense and it's slowing them down. I think he's thinking too much on defense and it's slowing them down a little bit. And so I do think he'll get there eventually, because the athletic component is there, and the want to, like, he's got a desire to guard. He's not one of those scorers that's just like, I'm going to get my buckets and then you got to take care of that down on that end. Like, he wants to guard. He has that desire.
We'll zoom through some last guys here. I'll have you on again and we'll talk about some more guys in detail, but Alex Caravan, I think, has been super impressive for Connecticut so far, and the shot hasn't even fallen yet. Every time I watch Alex Caravan, I'm just like, okay, this guy's 6'8", very clearly knows how to move without the ball. I think he's a really underrated defender, and I definitely think he can shoot. Like, he's hitting 31% from three right now, and that won't hold. But I think Alex Caravan's been quite good. Keyshaw Johnson at Arizona has been an interesting, like, four-man that is very different from what they've had there in the first couple of years under Tommy Lloyd, where they've played a lot more two bigs. Keyshaw is more of like an athletic four man that is good defensively and cuts and makes the right plays consistently. I like what I've seen from him in terms of changing the game athletically, being able to make plays that way. I like PJ Hall at Clemson. I think he's been impressive. Have you watched Florida State yet?
So this is what's great about you, Sam. Like, you put in your text this morning, you know, a list of dudes that include, say the dude's name again, because I'm
Jameer Watkins.
And so, like, I'm reading through the list last night right before I go to bed. I'm like, yeah, I can talk about all those guys. Jameer Watkins. I'm not going to write this back to Sam, because I don't want to look like I'm not a diehard. But I got no clue who Jameer Watkins is, because I hadn't watched Florida State yet. But I did pop on. I watched like a part of one of their games, and I watched a bunch of synergy clips. And so that's where I don't have the feel for like what his feel is like, but I will say, and we're both basketball nerds, and we usually have a pretty good grasp of like whose players are not. We got to admit, he wasn't on our transfer list, right?
No, he wasn't. No, he wasn't at all. He transferred in from VCU this year. Yeah. We ranked 100 transfers, like easy. And he was not on our list. He has been super impressive. Like, we fucked that up. We just need to be real about that.
No, we did. Like, for sure.
We fucked that up.
Hey, that's it to Leonard.
Yeah. Leonard finds these dudes that are 6'7" athletes and figures out how to make them work. In the roads,
having a guy like that in his program. He is old for his grade. I looked that up.
Yeah. He turns 23, like, right around draft day this year.
Yeah. But he, like, from a going back to, you know, the argument I made with Dalton, like the size athleticism thing and the being able to finish at the rim. And it looks like
he's finishing above the rim.
He's finishing above the rim. So is Dalton, both of them.
Yeah.
But like got a little dribble game to him, just being able to kind of get in tight little windows. And so he had a travel call in him in one game that wasn't a travel, just like, but it was like some creativity, you know, Euro stepping or something around some guys. So yeah, I'm there with you. Like I want to watch some full games and kind of see what he's like as a defender. But I did see him making some impressive plays on the defensive end. That was a big miss by us. But the shooting's not there. He's not much of a shot. But man, the size and like the athletic ability and the finishing ability and his assists are pretty high up, which he didn't really show at VCU.
Yeah, the passing is what stood out to me for sure. Yeah. Like the fact that this dude can make the passing reads that he does out of ball screens, like he's been super, super, super impressive to this point. You know, 6'7" wing kind of guard. Like I the way Florida State plays, like they obviously play all of these dudes that are just big and long and athletic. Mm-hmm. I mean, like if you wanted to call him their point guard, like he kind of shares it with Jalen Worley, both of whom are 6'7". Like, I guess I would say that he's kind of been their best guard this year, but 6'7" wing, 14 points, 6 rebounds, 4.4 assists, 1.8 steals, 2.4 turnovers, 52% from the field, 71% from the line, only making 29% of his threes, and hasn't really been much of a shooter throughout the course of his career. But man, I watched the Colorado game, and I went in thinking like, okay, I'm excited. I'm going to see like Cody Williams. I'm going to see Baba Miller. I want to see Tristan Da Silva, who I like. And Jameer Watkins was like, just popped off the screen. And I was like, oh wait, like this is actually a dude. I mentioned a bunch of names before that, obviously. Des Claude is a guy at Xavier that I quite like. Any direction you want to take that, like by all means, outside of Jameer Watkins.
I'm with you with Alex Caravan. I love, like, just to talk about another guy who knows how to play basketball, knows how to get out of screens and find open space. You mentioned his defense. Did you watch the Indiana game?
Yeah. Yeah,
I was a little concerned with – I thought Malik Renault kind of had his way with him and kind of could overpower him a little bit. So,
yeah,
I that might be a concern, like big wings taking him into the post and kind of being able to bully him there. But another guy that – and like you said, I don't – what's he so far from three, like in the mid-30s?
So he's at 31 this year, but he hit 40 last year.
Which is surprising. Open. Like you watch their games and – you think he's hitting it at a higher rate than that. The other thing,
he'll make them at a higher rate than that.
He will.
He's a better shooter than that.
Yeah. They also clean up like every single miss ever. So they still
keep the ball. Yeah. Like speaking of the Indiana game, like I feel like I've seen people, and look, this is not a podcast where I want to shit on guys, but like I've seen people bring up like Khalil Ware, like having played well and like, you know, done really well defensively against Donovan Clingan in that game. Donovan Clingan had 7 offensive rebounds in that game, and Connecticut like repeatedly attacked Khalil Ware in ball screens, like tried to get him in space, feeling like he was not able to manage his gap between the roller and the ball handler. And then they just like repeatedly hit kickouts. Like they won that game by 20. I didn't think Khalil played like as bad as he did at Oregon, but like I didn't see NBA prospect in that game when I watched Khalil Ware.
Yeah, he had a couple decent moments. I think it watching it from a like I'm about to cover Kansas, Connecticut, I think Hunter Dickinson can get some pick and pops, and because you know they drop Klingon back in such a deep drop, and I think he has trouble getting out the 3-point line. That's where Ware had a couple decent moments in that game. But man, speaking of like guys that are supposed to be NBA prospects probably and were 5 stars, Mackenzie Mbako was a nightmare in that game. Like,
yeah, he's not been really bad, very good.
Really bad defensively, and he hasn't been very good offensively. Like, had no idea what he was doing defensively.
Yeah, he won't be on my top 100. And like, to be clear, like I only rank freshmen this early in the season in the top 50, so it means like he's not in my top 50. But yeah, McKenzie's got a minute here. I think he's going to be at Indiana, I think.
Yeah, for a while. I don't like to like crap on guys like that too hard, but like that was one of my takeaways from that game. Is like that guy, he needs. I'm surprised they're playing him as many minutes as they are. And can Indiana just get a guy that can make a jump shot?
Yeah, they really need it. I mean, just play Gabe Cups, like just rock, right? All right, CJ. Is there anyone else you want to bring up? Like I feel like I'm through. Like actually, here we got one more. Has Harrison Ingram resurrected himself as a draft prospect? I'm going to answer this question as like, I think that he's really helped himself and he definitely will be like probably in my top 75 right now. Knocking down threes at a real level. I want to see exactly where that settles in, but the shot looks better. He's, I think, using his passing and processing ability in a more translatable way to what it would be in the NBA. They're using him more as like a true wing as opposed to Stanford, who used him as like a point forward and like they'd let him do all sorts of stuff on the break and like really play with the ball in his hands a lot. I like the way North Carolina is using Harrison Ingram a lot more than the way Stanford did. And because of that, I'm definitely intrigued by Ingram. He's big, 6'8" with a 7-foot wingspan, has the size. I don't know if he's athletic enough. Like I don't really see him as like a first rounder in all likelihood, unless he is an elite fucking shooter. But he's helped himself a lot this year, I think, so far. And do you have any thoughts? I'll pull up what his like in season numbers are while you're talking, CJ.
No, I'll be honest. I've casually watched them so far. Like I haven't really dived deep into their film at all. But you know, it's encouraging that he's actually carving out a real role, and he's at least, if you look at his game by game numbers, he's scoring double figures every game. He had 20 against Nova, which I think that's probably a tape to go back and watch, because Nova is so big on one-on-one defense, and like you've got to like actually go get some buckets against them, and they've got big wings, so that's probably a tape for you who cares about NBA prospects to like go back and watch that one. And study it, but I don't have a strong take on him. I know neither of us were super high on him coming out of Stanford, and far as how we do our portal rankings, but we knew he was going to be he was a solid get. I'd say he's outperformed what we were probably expecting at this point.
Yeah, I think my worry was like I've always liked the talent. It's just like my worry was I thought he was a 4 athletically and not a 3, and I think that he's. You know, they're playing him a lot more at the 4, and I thought that they would play him at the 3, I guess I would say, based off of having Jalen Washington, having Jalen Withers. Like, I thought that they would play big more often than they've played smaller. And, you know, credit to Hubert Davis. I think he's, you know, done a better job with this team than what I expected. And he deserves, you know, credit for that. But I think Ingram's been good as like their small ball 4 who can step out and shoot and make some plays. But CJ, do you have anybody else? And do you want to get out of here? I feel like we're about good here. Right?
I did say I wanted your take on Braden Smith because I absolutely love Braden Smith.
Yeah.
I think it's really, really hard to make it in the NBA when you're under 6 foot. But he does have I'm told he has a 6'5 wingspan. And he's probably one of my favorite players in college basketball. Kind of like we started this podcast talking about Reed Sheppard. Like, do you ever see Reed Sheppard make a bad play? Do you like Braden Smith had his lumps last year, and obviously he took his lumps, his worst ones in the like a very high profile game. But man, this year he has been outstanding and very rarely you'll see him make the wrong read, and he is awesome in the ball screen setting.
So here's my concern with Braden Smith, right? I would argue they've played like one high pressure defensive team this year, right? To win Maui, they won against Gonzaga, Tennessee, Marquette. Gonzaga, like I don't love Gonzaga's guards on defense this year, at least. Marquette, you know, we can talk about Tyler Kolek and Cam Jones, but they're not like high pressure defensive guards. Tennessee has high pressure defensive guards. Like those are the dudes that'll really get after you. And against Tennessee, Braden Smith went for 6 points on 2-for-9 shooting, and had one assist and three turnovers. That's kind of what he needs to prove, right? He needs to prove that he can handle that like heavy ball pressure, I feel like, because that's what Fairleigh Dickinson did to him last year. That was, you know, his biggest struggle. And if he can prove that, if he can prove that he can handle those like heavy pressure defenders, I'll be really interested. It's just that I feel like we haven't seen that yet from him.
Yeah, that's fair. But keep your eye. He is seeing him in person. He is even shorter than I thought. So that is something that is maybe a concern. But man,
I will say like he's big, like he's bigger through his like chest this year. It feels like,
yeah. That's what popped at first when I watched them this summer. I was like, oh, he's bigger. And, but man, he's really, really good out of a ball screen and making the right reads and being able to hit, you know, that pull up against drop coverage. And just another one of those guys that is like, he's just got some shit to him. And like he will talk it. He doesn't care. I think, you know, some guys that experience of a game like FDU can ruin you. He has bounced back in the right kind of way. So I don't think he's a guy that comes out after this year, but I was just interested to see what your thought is on him long-term. Like he's one of those guys that like is, you know, there's some guys that you're just not sure about their size, yada, yada, yada. I always like to bring out Fred VanVleet. But like back in when he was in college, you just knew there was something special about him. I used to tell NBA scouts, like, if you can get him to even just put on the end of your bench, like worth it to have him in your locker room. And so I'm very intrigued with like how a Braden Smith career, professional career plays out, just because the size is like the one concern. And yours is legitimate, although I think you'll see it's less of a thing as the season plays out. Like, I think he's going to prove he can handle that.
I hope so. I mean, look, Big Ten, like, there are some interesting guards in the Big Ten this year. Like, Doug McDaniel's been pretty good to start the year. I don't think he's really an NBA guy. I really like Bruce Thornton quite a bit at Ohio State. I think he's been super, super impressive. You know, I've heard good things about Derek Simpson at Rutgers. I think he's had some turnover issues early on. We'll see what it looks like, though.
Tyson Walker is really fun.
Tyson Walker at Michigan State, the Michigan State guys with A.J. Hoggard as well, who just moved out of the starting lineup. You know, there are some real interesting players this year in the backcourt, right? Like Jameer Young, Boo Booey. Like, he'll get tested, I think, in the Big Ten. It'll be interesting to see how he responds. CJ, tell the people where they can find your work. Tell the people what's going on.
Well, like Sam, you can find my work at The Athletic. My Twitter handle is CJ Moore Hoops. And I don't really like social media, but I'm on there every once in a while.
CJ's the best. Go follow CJ's work at The Athletic. He does a good job staying off of social media. He does the right thing, in my opinion.
I'm usually watching tape or playing ball myself.
CJ's either going to watch tape, write about the tape, write about the interviews he does, or he's going to play basketball. That's really it. Or he's going to coach his like son playing basketball. It's going to be one of the five things, really. Go to The Athletic. Keep us employed over there. I will be back tomorrow with Mark Schindler. We're going to run through some NBA news and notes, talk about the in-season tournament, talk about a few other things. That's about all I got. I'll be back on Sunday again with Bryce Simon. We'll probably do a little bit of NBA draft stuff, a little bit of NBA stuff. And then, you know, who knows after that? I'll have a top 100 board on The Athletic at some point within the next 7 days, let's call it. But until next time, we'll talk soon.